Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to look at energizing your heart and saving your life. Rejuvenac, the nutrient, I'll talk about it. Cardiac cellular energy production, I'll talk about it. And what to do after a heart attack. So we have a lot to share on that. That'll be in-depth. That'll be from Dr. Julia Scope, medical doctor. Also, if you wondered why are some of the prices for cancer drugs so expensive, why isn't this thing being openly debated? Would you believe that one single drug costs over $100,000 a year? Yes. Well, there should be an uproar. There isn't. But 100 oncologists became angry about this, began to protest the outlandish prices charged for cancer drugs and the inflated cost, and said this is not sustainable. I'll give you the lowdown on that. Oregon grapefruit, a natural solution for resistant infections, and more. We'll also talk in depth about olive leaf extract and the constituents that are best known for their blood pressure lowering effects. But there's new information shows it does even more than that. How Mexico got so fat and is now right up with the United States, running neck and neck in obesity. You've heard the word tea tree oil. What is it and what's it good for? My guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Raphael Kelman, an internal medical physician, and he's going to talk about the critical importance of a healthy microfilm for maintaining and warning off a variety of illnesses. Commentaries from Sheldon Richman, War, the Racket of Big Business, Wall Street, and the Bankers. And then, with climate change, heat, more than natural disasters will drive people away. The whooping cough epidemic, it's a failure of the vaccine. Give you the latest on that. Also, a big victory for small towns. You have a right to ban fracking. Well, that's good news. And also, America's paramilitary police, Andrea Damon. And we don't seem to have a problem on Democrat or Republican agendas of giving the Pentagon, the intelligence agencies, everything they want and more. From Winslow Wheeler, blank check for the Pentagon, America's $1 trillion national security budget per year. It's actually $1.5 trillion. As you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Oregon grapefruit is a very important part of the natural pharmacopoeia. It is one such solution for helping fight against resistant infections. And like MRSA, which, by the way, a lot of people die of, thousands die each year in the United States because no antibiotic works. I believe that there's a lot that could work if you used direct ozone, Manuka honey, colloidal silver, IV vitamin A. You could do a lot. And then you use the other things that are known to make a difference, like bee propolis. And that would also be true for bed sores that killed 80,000 Americans. Now think of it this way. Last year, more Americans died from bed sores, from being in hospitals, nursing homes, than all of American casualties in the Vietnam War, plus. This simple herb, this Oregon grapefruit, is very important. It has antimicrobial properties, and they're extremely potent, and yet we're not using them. What could it be used for? Well, it could be used for liver problems, eye infections, gynecological infections, urinary tract infections, inflammatory bowel infections, infectious diarrhea caused by parasites, sore throats, mouth infections, skin infections, and wound treatment. All that. And so it's in the alkaloid family, and it's been known to kill MRSA cells. So that would be something I would make sure that you'd want to have at home. Now, also, a lot of people use olive leaf. It's one of the 10 must-have home remedies in everyone's home. Olive leaf, according to Life Extension, has what are called the oleuropein. That's a group of chemicals that are known to lower blood pressure. But they do more than that. New research shows that they're extremely powerful at turning off inflammation and helping with diabetes, cancer, virtually all the neurodegenerative diseases, and arthritis. And this is very powerful. For example, let's just use blood pressure. Animal studies show that olive leaf extract, I'm suggesting 1,000 milligrams, can significantly drop the blood pressure if it's elevated. And the drop in blood pressure is accompanied by a reduced pressure in the heart's left ventricle. And this results in improved blood flow to the heart's own coronary artery vessels. That's important. It helps with arterial health. Because blood pressure is only one measure of cardiovascular health, arterial health is equally important. And the endothelial cells that I talk about a great deal line your artery walls, and they play a role in maintaining blood flow and pressure. They also regulate the distribution of smooth muscle cells and sustain an even flow of blood through vessels. Endothelial dysfunction is one of the earliest stages of hardening of the arteries, which occurs when plaque builds up in the arterial walls. Now, these plaques eventually block blood flow and can trigger a heart attack or stroke. Well, olive leaf extract fights endothelial dysfunction at multiple levels. It increases the production of nitric oxide, a signaling molecule that helps relax blood vessels, and they reduce the production activity of a class of molecules known as matrix, MMPs. Now, these MMP activities literally dissolve the gel-like matrix that holds cells together, making vessels thin and vulnerable to plaque damage. Well, olive leaf extract helps block that. And polyphenol compounds found in olive leaves have been shown to help directly prevent the formation of arterial plaques, thereby reducing the risk of heart attack and stroke. It's also good for diabetics and pre-diabetics, especially those who have a state of chronic blood sugar elevation, which creates oxidative stress and triggers inflammation and tissue damage, accelerates the aging of your eyes, your heart, your brain. Lower the blood glucose to normal and limit the damage done by the inevitable blood sugar spikes that occur, because every time your blood spikes in sugar, it's damaging. Well, olive leaf extracts are shown to be able to do both. In animal and basic lab studies, olive leaf extracts have been found to lower blood sugar, and that's a good thing, and prevent glycation, which is the excessive aging of the cells. So all that's good, and it works, and it's completely non-toxic. But there's new research on cancer. Now, all you have to do is look at the Mediterranean diet, which is renowned for its ability to reduce cancer. And olives and olive oil and olive leaf content are components of the diet's anti-cancer effects. It helps inhibit the DNA damage from reactive oxygen species, which is the very first step in developing malignant cells. Because once cells become cancerous, they rely on a host of chemical signaling factors that promote their growth and organization into tumors. And olive leaf compounds are known to inhibit growth factors and disrupt signaling pathways. So that's good. Helps your brain. In acute brain injuries, such as those caused by a stroke or trauma, damaging processes such as oxidative stress occur within minutes of the original event, and ironically worsening by the return of normal blood flow to the area. Well, there was a 55% decrease in the volume of dying brain tissue when olive leaf extract was used. Helps with arthritis, turns off gout and the accumulation of uric acid crystals in joints, and so on all levels, this is a very important nutrient to have. And again, you can get it from 500 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams, and it's going to help everything. Again, it's our second nutrient that must go into our medicine cabinets, our refrigerators, and keep them there until you need them. We are a very fat nation and getting fatter. Babies are fatter, toddlers, infants, adolescents, teens, young adults. In fact, we're the fattest nation in the world per population. But Mexico's right behind us. Almost 33% of Mexicans are now obese. 70% of the entire population is overweight. And the moment you go obese, you increase your risk of heart attack, stroke, cancer, dementia, arthritis. You really put yourself in harm's way. In Mexico, as in the United States, the poor and the young and the uneducated are worst affected. And they also have malnutrition, so you can be overfed and undernourished. Now, traditionally, the Mexican diet is not a healthy diet. It's very high in calories and fat and fried food. But what's happening is that because the constant wanting to be more American, you have all these American-Mexican business ventures of all these fast food restaurants, and they're very unhealthy. And more of the population are eating at those. And that's causing an absolute epidemic in diabetes and cardiovascular disease to be on the increase. In fact, the top countries in the world in obesity, United States and Mexico, hand in hand, New Zealand, Chile, Australia, Canada, United Kingdom, Ireland, Luxembourg, Finland, that's your top 10. Interesting, China, and India, Russia, other large countries, large populations, no. Though it is increasing in India. Quote, the same people who are malnourished are the ones who are becoming obese. In the poor classes, we have obese parents and malnourished children. The worst thing is the children are becoming programmed for obesity. It's an epidemic. So my suggestion is that those in this audience start a campaign, if you have friends or yourself of Mexican origin, to inform them the dangers of drinking colas, eating fast foods. We have a lot of articles that you could send them, and that would be helpful. All right, y'all, I also have a documentary called It's Not Your Fault, You're Fat. Watch it, send it to them. It can help. And last, what is tea tree oil good for? Well, tea tree oil can help with things such as lice, genital herpes, thrush, dandruff, gingivitis, coughs, ear infections, and ringworms. And now you should never swallow tea tree oil. It can cause severe rashes. But as a topical, it is very beneficial. Acne, fungus under the nails. A study published in the journal Tropical Medicine International and Health found that treating toenail fungus with 5% tea tree oil cured 80% of the patients. It can help with athlete's feet, according to the Australia's Journal of Dermatology. And it can help with infected skin wounds. University of Wolverhampton in England found that mixing tea tree oil with silver greatly enhanced the antimicrobial activity, minimizing side effects of infected skin wounds, and even with acne. Tea tree oil also is a yellowish-colored, it's an essential oil made from the leaves of the plant from Australia. Tea tree oil and tea oil are completely different products. Tea oil is the sweet seasoning and cooking oil from processed beverage tea plant, and it's a different species completely, whereas the tea tree oil is indigenous to Australia, and there they use it for different conditions and have for a long time. So, something we can use. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. With climate change, from Princeton University comes this statement, quote, although scenes of people fleeing from dramatic displays of Mother Nature's power dominate the news, gradual increases in the area's overall temperature and, to a lesser extent, precipitation actually lead more often to permanent population shifts. The research examined 15 years of migration data of more than 7,000 families in Indonesia and found that increase in temperature and, to a lesser extent, rainfall influenced the family's decision to permanently migrate to another of the country's provinces. This was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. So what does this mean? Why should we be impacted by this? Because here's the reality. If you were on any of the trips that I take so frequently, through Texas, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, you would see that people have tried to adapt to living in extremely humid environments, frequently where there's excessive flooding, more so than what they've seen in the past, and then the increase in temperatures, where you just swelter. Now, we know that that's not good when you have high humidity because then the body can't sweat. And so sweating is a normal process that helps the body cool. So what happens is you become extremely uncomfortable. Now imagine New York City in August, July and August, where the heat is held into the concrete in steel. And so even at night, the temperature at the ground does not go down a lot, even if the ambient air is cooler, especially if you're living up high. And that means that it's going to be more uncomfortable, which means more people will be spending more time indoors. I remember giving a lecture in Phoenix, and it was one of my first important lectures. There's a picture of it up on my website, and you see this huge civic center. Every seat is taken, thousands of people. And what I found unusual was that day I had walked around town. I had nothing to do that day. I'd finished all the media promoting the lecture, and it was so hot that as I was standing, if I just stood in one place on the street, I could feel my tennis shoes starting to stick to the pavement. I remember I leaned over and to tie a shoe, and I put my hand, hit a car, and it burned it. That's how hot it was. I had never experienced anything like that before. And everything was sweltering. People didn't spend much time outside because it was just too hot. It's much hotter now. In fact, some of the hottest days on record last year were in Arizona and in these cities. Because remember, whatever it is in the desert, it's going to be hotter in the city because of all the concrete and heat absorption. So what we're going to be faced with is people not knowing what to do. Think of the energy drain. Think of the electric bills. Think of how much you're going to be paying. Think of lack of quality of life. Now, already, I don't know why a lot of people live down in the bayous. If you've ever been in the bayous, man, there's mosquitoes everywhere. And people get used to it. But if you're not in that environment, and you go down there and you start to talk with people and you notice there's sand fleas everywhere. I'm doing an interview, and I notice at least 20 sand fleas in this person's leg that I'm filming. I said, doesn't that bother you? Oh, no, you get used to it. There's tiny little red marks all over the person's legs. They adapted or maladapted to their environment. So you're going to find it very difficult to live in at least 25 states in the United States because of excessive heat and humidity. And you're going to get the community with the rain. And then you're going to have a permanent culture for mosquitoes because standing rain, pools, water pools, that's where you get your mosquitoes. So that is what's coming now. Also, from the Spanish National Research Council, all the world's oceans have plastic debris on their surface. Now, you can't see a lot of it because it's microparticles, what they call microplastics. Quote, researchers have demonstrated the existence of five large accumulations of plastic waste in the open ocean, which match with the five major twists of surface water circulation. However, central surface waters of the oceans may not be the final destination of the plastic debris, since, as indicated by the study performed by the expedition, large amounts of microplastic could be passing to the marine food chain and to the ocean floor. And this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. To give you an idea how big one of those patches are three times the size of Texas. And if you go through those areas, you can't notice it from the air. But if you're down there, you'll see it. And all of the sea life becomes impacted by it because they don't know that it's not something to eat. And every day, millions of these creatures are dying because they're suffocating by eating this plastic. So here's a suggestion. And I thought about this, because being an inventor, being a person who likes to come up with solutions, my mind's always focused on how can we fix something. You could take a large sea vessel, one that is adapted for long stays on the ocean, and in it you could have, just imagine, like an old whaling vessel, where they would have the front lift down, and then they pull these wells, which was unfortunate, but I'm just talking now about the technology. You could do this where the front of this large ship would look like a giant, almost circular mouth, and it would go through pulling up everything within 30 feet of the surface, which is where most of it is. It would then be brought in and immediately put into a biodegrading process that would immediately biodegrade it. There are several ways to biodegrade it. And then what you have is you've biodegraded it. You can compress it. And then you can recycle it. So you could have processing to clean it up, much like a vacuum cleaner. You bring in the debris, you process it, you break it down, and then you have it for recycling. If we had 1,000 of those ships out there, you could have 3 or 4 from every country, because every country that is dealing with plastic, that plastic ends up sooner or later into the ocean. And there's only one ocean. There's not the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, Atlantic Ocean, Arctic. There's only one body of water. So we're all, as world citizens, responsible. That would help that. Is it doable? Yes, it is. The mechanics are doable. The technology exists. We just need to focus more energy on it. And good news also for those individuals who live in small towns who felt, gee whiz, like in the state of Pennsylvania, which is so corrupt. I mean, utterly corrupt at every level. And they have allowed the gas hydrofracking companies to write the laws. Well, New York Court of Appeals says local communities can ban controversial oil and gas drilling. And this is from Common Dreams. Quote, in a victory for fracking opponents, towns in New York today won the right to ban oil and gas production operations from their communities. The ruling may have widespread effects on the drilling industry as towns continue to file moratoriums on the environmentally harmful process. The decision sets a precedent for environmental activists in New York, as more than 170 of the state's other municipalities wait for legal action to be taken on anti-fracking measures in their communities as well. Towns in Colorado, Ohio, California, Pennsylvania, and Texas are also beginning to pursue oil and gas production bans, public interest law firm Earth Justice reports. Quote, the decision by the Court of Appeals has settled the matter once and for all across New York State and has sent a firm message to the oil and gas industry. And that was from Deborah Goldberg, Earth Justice. So, whatever community you're in New York, fight to ban gas and oil drilling in your community. You now have the right, and we've won one, and that's important. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. And one of the things that makes a difference is not paying attention to what people are doing that impact us. I am very familiar with the work of Smedley Darlington Butler. He was the most decorated member of the Marine Corps. From 1998 until 1931, he was a member of the U.S. Marine Corps. And by the time he retired, according to Sheldon Richman, he had achieved what was then the Corps' highest rank, Major General. And by the time he died in 1940, at the age of 58, he had more decorations, including two Medals of Honor, than any Marine. During his years in the Corps, he was sent to the Philippines, China, France, Mexico, Central America, and Haiti. In light of this record, General Butler presumably shocked a good many people. In 1935, just 5 years before he died, as a Second World War was looming, he wrote in the magazine Common Sense, quote, "I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service, and during that period I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for U.S. businesses, for Wall Street and bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I helped make Mexico, and especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National Citibank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1902 through 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for the American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for the American fruit companies in 1903. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went on its way unmolested. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents." End quote. That same year, he published a short book with the now infamous title, War is a Racket, for which he is best known today. Butler opened the book with these words, "War is a racket, always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses of lives." End quote. He followed that by noting, quote, "For a great many years as a soldier, I had a suspicion that war was a racket. Not until I retired to civil life did I fully realize it. Now that I see the international war clouds gathering, as they are today, I must face it and speak out." Now, Butler went on to describe who bears the cost of war: the men who die or return home with wrecked lives, and the taxpayers. And who profits? The companies that sell goods and services to the military. The term military-industrial complex would not gain prominence until 1961, when Dwight Eisenhower used it in his presidential farewell address. And writing in the mid-1930s, Butler foresaw a U.S. war with Japan to protect trade with China and investments in the Philippines, and declared that it would make no sense to the average American. Quote, "We would all be stirred up to hate Japan and go to war, a war that might well cost us tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of lives of Americans, many more hundreds of thousands of physically maimed and mentally unbalanced men. Of course, for this loss, there will be a compensating profit. Fortunes would be made. Millions and billions of dollars would be piled up by a few. Munitions makers, bankers, shipbuilders, manufacturers, meat packers, speculators. They would all fare very well. But what does this profit the men who are killed? What does it profit their mothers and sisters, their wives and their sweethearts? What does it profit their children? What does it profit anyone except the very few to whom war means huge profits?" End quote. Noting that, quote, "until 1898, in the Spanish-American War, we didn't own a bit of territory outside the mainland of North America." He observed that after becoming an expansionist world power, the U.S. government's debt swelled 2,500%, and quote, we forgot George Washington's warning about entangled alliances. We went to war. We acquired outside territory. It would have been far cheaper for the average American who pays the bills to stay out of foreign entanglements. For very few, this racket, this bootlegging, and other underworld rackets brings fancy profits. But the cost of operations is always transferred to the people who do not profit. Butler detailed the huge profits of companies that sold goods to the government during the past wars and interventions in the banks that made money handling the government's bonds. Quote, the normal profits of a business concern in the United States are 6, 8, 10, sometimes 12%. But wartime profits, that's a different matter, 20, 60, 100, 300, even 1,800% profit. The sky's the limit. All that traffic will bear. Uncle Sam has the money, so let's get going. Of course, it isn't put that crudely in wartime. It's stressed in speeches about patriotism, love of country. We must all put our shoulders to the wheel. But the profits jump and leap and skyrocket and are safely pocketed. And who provides these returns? We all pay them in taxation. But the soldiers pay the biggest part of the bill. His description of conditions at veterans' hospitals reminded me of what we're hearing today about the dilapidated veterans' health care system. Butler expressed his outrage at how members of the armed forces are essentially tricked into going to war at a pitiful wage. Beautiful ideals are painted for our men and women who are sent out to die. Quote, this was the war to end all wars. This was the war to make the world safe for democracy. No one mentioned to them as they marched away that their going and their dying would mean huge war profits. No one told these American soldiers they might be shot down by bullets made by their own brothers here. No one told them that the ships on which they were going to cross might be torpedoed by submarines built in the United States. They were just told it was to be a glorious adventure. Thus, having stuffed patriotism down their throats, it was decided to make them help pay for the war, too. So we gave them the large salary of $30 a month. End quote. Butler proposed ways to make war less likely. Unlike others, he had little faith in disarmament conferences and the like. Rather, he suggested three measures. One, take the profit out of war by conscripting capital and industry and labor. At $30 a month before soldiers are conscripted, submit two, the question of entry into a proposed war to a vote. Let the American public decide. Is this worth fighting and dying for? Three, make certain that our military forces are truly forces for defense only. Now, it's unlikely these measures would ever be adopted by Congress or signed by a president. And of course, conscription is morally objectionable, even if the idea of drafting war profiteers has a certain appeal. But Butler's heart was in the right place. He was aware that his program would not succeed. Quote, I'm not a fool as to believe that the war is a thing of the past. Yet in 1936, he formalized his opposition to war in his proposed constitutional amendment of peace. It contained three paragraphs. One, the removal of the members of the land armed forces from within the continent's limits of the United States and the Panama Zone for any cause whatsoever is prohibited. Two, the vessels of the United States Navy or of the other branches of the armed forces are hereby prohibited from steaming for any reason whatsoever except on an errand of mercy more than 500 miles from our coast. And three, aircraft in Army, Navy, and Marine Corps is hereby prohibited from flying for any reason whatsoever more than 750 miles beyond the coast of the United States. He elaborated on the amendment in his philosophy of defense in an article in Women's Home Companion, September 1936. It's a cliche, of course, to say, quote, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But on reading Butler today, who can resist thinking it? As we watch Barack Obama unilaterally and illegally reinsert the U.S. military into Iraq disaster, it helped cause and sink deeper into the violence in Syria. We might all join in the declaration for which Butler closes his book. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. The highest ranking member in the Marine Corps, the most decorated Marine in history, spoke out, spoke the truth, and nobody wanted to hear it. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
You had the better hold on. Hold on to what you got. You had the better hold on. Hold on to what you got. 'Cause if you think nobody wants it, just throw it away, and you will see someone will have it before you can count. One, two,
nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go to Dr. Raphael Kalman to talk about the critical importance of maintaining health and warding off a variety of illnesses with a simple process. But before we go there, we have our one special this week, and it's a dilly. We've never offered this before. We're going to give you a jar of the red stuff, the 300 vegan capsule, red stuff, same ingredients. Because a lot of people like the capsules because they like to take them with them throughout the day. That's why I made them. But it's the same ingredients. Now, normally, you'd be paying one price. Here's what you're getting today for $34.95. You're getting your red stuff at a big discount. And what's in the red stuff, just so you understand, it's got the best of the best. Because we know we should be eating our fruits and vegetables. Trouble is, most people don't. So make sure you're getting your fruits and vegetables, as much as I can give you, in this or this raw form. We wash the fruits and then juice them and then dry them without heat. I'm giving you apricots, tangerines, limes, lemons, pineapples, pomegranate, blood oranges, pink grapefruit, nectarines, red currants, watermelon, mangoes, papaya, pears, peaches, red raspberries, cherries, apples, strawberries, and cranberries. Yeah, 4,000 milligrams in a serving. Big size. All right? So this is phenomenal. In that way, you can take them anywhere you want, take them throughout the day. But you're getting something extra. Extra that would cost you $50 more. You're getting a brand new The Way of Love and Relationship CD. I have not formally released this. It's done. I was waiting till I returned to New York because I just completed it. And here's what it is. First, I just stood back and I took a look at our modern culture. And I think it's reached an impasse in the way that love and relationships are handled. Increasingly, we have self-centered distractions, the distractions of the internet, of social media's technical wizardry, and they've substituted the potential for meaningful relationships and love with superficial surrogates that shun the potential for people to communicate and to share each other's presence in all of its fullness. And the commercialization of the heart and desires has made it clear that our society is rapidly losing its way in sustaining the kind of love that brings healthy, fulfilling relationships. So I brought together the finest minds on the subject of love and relationships that I knew of. The Epigenetics of Love and Relationships with Professor Bruce Lipton. Creating a Spiritual Marriage with Vasalsa Sperling, founder of Inner Traditionals Publishing. The Collapse of Relationships and Love in American Society, Betty Cohen. Developing a Loving Attitude and Creating Trust, Dr. David Rico. The Dynamics of Harmony and Conflict in Relationships and Marriage, Dr. Helen Hunt, and Dr. Harville Hendricks. Why Men Have Difficulty with Love and Intimacy by Dr. Michael Kimmel. Now, these 5 1-hour discussions are yours as a gift. So, you would normally pay $100, you're paying just $34.95, saving $65, getting insights, because people really appreciated the CD collections I do, because I take a lot of time to do them. They're professionally produced. The best minds I can find are in them. And they're just, each and every hour is just memorable. Here's how you get them. All this for just $34.95. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. For the red stuff and the special, and get the whole set of the Way of Love and Relationships, and get it as a gift for someone who may be having trouble with relationships. Maybe you know someone who's single, who's lonely, and or depressed, or anxious. Maybe someone who's failing in relationships, or just to enhance your own. So, that's what you're getting. It's a great deal. Never offered before. All right? Red stuff, which is great for all the fruits. Just be realistic. I mean, how many of you right now listening are going to have today cranberries, strawberries, and apples? Cherries, red raspberries, and peaches. Pears, papaya, and mango. Watermelon, red currants, and nectarines. Pink grapefruit, blood oranges, and pomegranates. Pineapple, lemons, and limes. Tangerines, and apricot. How about nobody? Because nobody gets all that in a day, except when you take your red stuff, and then you are. But we've made it easy. We've made it more convenient. We've made it based upon what people ask us. Oh, Gary, I'd love to take this. I take it in the morning, but I'd like to take it to work with me. Now you can take it on a trip. You can take it, you know, when you're traveling. You just take the capsules you want, boom, and then you take it. That's it. Give a call, all right? Before we go to our guest standing by, let's just say hello to Jim from New Jersey, who wants to discuss the generality of war. Hi, Jim, your turn.
Hi, Gary. This is Tim in Madison, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi.
I think that for the nature of Smedley Butler, that no one can really know the horrors of war and divulge them other than someone who's been through that, and that war is really one of the worst impediments to our evolution into a more evolved civilization.
I would agree with that. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing those insights. Let's now go over and say hello to my guest standing by, Dr. Raphael Kelman, a medical doctor in internal medical medicine in private practice in Midtown Manhattan. He's been serving the complementary medical community for 20 years, and he was the founder of the Mind Body New York, one of the country's most advanced integrated medical centers. Nice to have you with us today, Raphael. Hi, Raphael.
Yes, you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Good, good, good.
Every day, I start my broadcast with reporting on the most recent medical science to support natural alternative modalities and treatments.
Sure.
And in recent years, there's been a large number of scientific research studies on the critical role of living bacteria in our gut.
Right.
And what that does in strengthening our health and warding off large variety of diseases and disorders, including moods and mental acuity. Most people don't realize the great importance this symbiotic relationship of our body has with the trillions of beneficial bacteria living inside of us, and how much our health relies upon that supporting beneficial bacteria and removing pathogenic bacteria. So I'd like for you to describe what is meant by the probiotic or the anti-pathogenic bacteria in our body. Take us through this as a classroom on the air, all right?
Sure, Gary. So this is what I describe in my book that was just published yesterday, The Microbiome Diet. It describes really a revolution in medicine that's been occurring over the last 7-8 years. And the research has been gathering and coalescing, and research has now realized, and even mainstream physicians and journals are recognizing that this, the microbiome, which are the trillions of gut bacteria, play an enormous role on our health in general, metabolic, hormonal, immunological health. And they've called these trillions of bacteria the microbiome. The scientists have realized that there are so many bacteria in our gut, they actually outnumber us 9 to 10 to 1. And if you add up their genetic influence, they outnumber us genetically 150 to 1. So really, we are mostly bacteria. We're an ecology. And the microbiome, it plays a dominant role, a huge role. And all of this was unknown to modern medicine 7 or 8 years ago. And even the Mayo Clinic, in one of their journals, said that this is a revolution in medicine equal to Mendelian genetic revolution and germ theory. So this really is going to play a huge role in the future. And for many of us, it's been playing a role for the last decade or two. But now we're seeing more and more. So the microbiome are basically friendly bacteria. We've come to learn over the years that all bacteria are bad. They're the bad guys, and we're the good guys, and we have to kill them out with antibiotics, etc. What the microbiome science is teaching us is that most bacteria are actually friendly. We live in a friendly ecology, not in a hostile ecology. That's assuming we follow the rules of this ecology, meaning eating healthy and having a certain type of a healthy lifestyle. When we are living a healthy lifestyle and eating the foods that most importantly heal and positively influence the microbiome, the trillions of gut bacteria, then we will be healthy as one whole ecology. So research is showing that the research, again, over the last 7 years is showing, and I've been seeing this clinically, there's been kind of parallel paths. What the researchers are finding and what I've been seeing actually with patients clinically is that the microbiome plays a very, very important role in metabolism. It plays a huge role in obesity. One of the main reasons why we've been experiencing an obesity epidemic in the last 50 years and why it's so difficult for so many people to lose weight legitimately, even though they're trying, is because we left out of the equation the microbiome. We haven't been taking care of our friendly bacteria. And we've been eating the foods without considering the needs and health of the microbiome. So what the research is showing is that if we do take care of the microbiome, then it will be much easier to improve our metabolism. In fact, for many people who were unable to lose weight, in spite of all the diets that they were trying and reduction in calories, when they took on this approach by focusing on the microbiome, they were finally able to lose weight. And this is what the research is showing, too, that this is really a key. It's really a game changer in our understanding of obesity, and it can be used in a positive way to help untold number of people so that they can finally lose the weight and really become healthy. And also the research is showing that the microbiome has a critical role in inflammation. It's the inflammation that starts in our body is very subtle. And you don't necessarily feel it, but you can detect it with certain biochemical markers and blood testing. The research is showing, and again, I've seen this clinically, that frequently the cause of this subtle inflammation that leads to so many diseases, like cancer, like diabetes, like heart disease, like osteoporosis, neurodegenerative diseases, inflammation is caused frequently, most often, by an imbalanced microbiome. And this is something that we've been unaware of for the last number of years. So there is a specific diet that one can take on in their daily practice, and this diet will help improve the health of the microbiome. And then you'll accomplish many things. You'll be able to lose weight without even trying. And you'll be able to get healthy because finally the inflammation will be reduced. The gut bacteria will be sending the right messages to the immune system, to the endocrine system, to the brain, and even to the genes. That's what the research is showing, that the microbiome has a direct connection to our genes. They can turn on and turn off the genes that are appropriate for us. When we want to reduce weight, lose weight, and decrease fat deposition, the microbiome knows how to do it. And all we need to do is to eat the right foods for the microbiome. And all this is discussed in my book, The Microbiome Diet. What type of diet will most benefit the microbiome?
In conclusion, give us what the diet is from your perspective.
So, Gary, yeah, sure. Look, there's two main things. Obviously, we have to remove the toxic foods, the refined carbohydrates. We have to remove GMO, foods that are genetically modified, because they scramble the DNA of the microbiome. Now remember, the microbiome, their DNA outnumber us 150 to 1. So if you want to, you mentioned epigenetics before. Epigenetics is everything that controls the genes. So if you want the genes to be turning on in the right way, in other words, the anti-inflammatory genes, the genes that code for fat degradation rather than fat deposition, we have to develop a friendly and a healthy gut microbiome. So the foods that we eat that improve gut bacteria, the friendly gut bacteria, will make the difference. So removing the unfriendly foods, like the refined carbohydrates, the GMOs, again, because they scramble the DNA, and then the right messages won't be sent to our metabolism. You want to remove any toxins, because the toxins found in our food, pesticides, the antibiotics that are mostly found in our foods, we have, because they ultimately will kill off the friendly bacteria. So what we eat is so critical. Remove the unfriendly foods, these things you've spoken about, and you've been speaking about this for years. We need to take this message seriously. Now we know another reason why, because it affects the microbiome. Take antibiotics only if it's a real must. Then you need to eat the gut microbiome friendly food. So obviously it's very important to think about how cultures used to eat, and we need to start rethinking how we should be eating in America. So cultured foods that contain the probiotics, for example, fermented foods such as sauerkraut and kimchi, and any type of fermented food that most cultures had as their basic diet, we should start eating like that as well. These are the probiotics, the friendly foods that will improve our bacteria, our microbiome. Then we want to eat the prebiotics. Most people are familiar with probiotics. That's the gut bacteria that we're introducing into our body. But we also want to introduce the foods that will help the gut bacteria, the microbiome, proliferate and become diverse endogenously from within. And by feeding them foods that contain inulin or foods that contain non-digestible starch, fiber, and foods that contain arabinogalactan, we'll be doing great things for our microbiome, and then we will get healthy, because then endogenously, in and of themselves, they're going to produce the friendly bacteria that are going to be diverse and healthy. It will flourish, and that will code for the proper metabolism, because it knows better than us how to do it, the gut bacteria. It knows better than us, and knows better than all the scientists, and knows better than all the scientists will ever know, because they co-evolved with us. So they know what genes to turn on better than anyone will ever know. So all we need to do, Gary, is get the gut microbiome healthy, eat the proper foods, cut out those unhealthy foods, eat sauerkraut, kimchi, fermented foods. Now you can get fermented coconut water. I see it in your store, Jerry. These are the foods we should be really incorporating into our diet. You can also take some of these as supplements, too. You can get inulin as a supplement. Or you can, of course, even better, get it in food. There are certain foods that contain these prebiotics, inulin and arabinogalactan. You can find it in asparagus, Jerusalem artichoke, leeks, jicama, radishes, kiwi. These, to me, are the microbiome superfoods because they're going to provide the inulin and the arabinogalactan that's going to make your gut bacteria healthy, and they'll take over from there, keeping you healthy.
Lots of good insights.
Raphael,
thank you for doing this. And Raphael's book is called The Microbiome. That's
Microbiome Diet.
Diet. It's B-I-O-M-E, if people are not familiar with it.
Right.
And it's
right.
a scientifically proven way to restore your gut health. Raphael's website is Raphael Kelman, K-E-L-L-M-E-N, M-D.com. All
right.
the best to you, Raphael.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Raphael Kelman. I'm Gary Nall. Now in the final segment of our program, I'm going to open it up for anyone else who would like to share insights on our talkback segment, 888-874-4888. And first up is Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I just wanted to do another shout-out to the audience, if any of you are practitioners out there. You know, for so many years, since you closed the Tri-State Healing Center a number of years ago, people have been emailing me and saying, wouldn't it be great, especially your new listeners, saying, wouldn't it be great if Gary had a progressive center, a healing center, where people can go for all of their medical needs and intravenous treatments and things like that. And it looks like we're going to put this together again. And right now I'm doing a shout-out for anyone out there who are practitioners. That includes medical doctors, chiropractors, herbologists. I just had an herbologist call me from Germany who is coming back to the States and might be part of it. Acupuncturists, people who practice any kind of Chinese medicine, massage therapists, hypnotherapists, orthomolecular psychiatrists. These are just a few of the different types of practitioners that I'll be interviewing to see if they'll fit. They're a fit for us. So if you're interested in being a part of Gary's Tri-State Healing Center, give me a call at 631-504-6198. Again, that number is 631-504-6198, and I'll be happy to speak with you.
Good. Keep in mind that that about 4,000 individuals were helped during the years that the Tri-State Center was open. I donated my time. I took no money, and we did a lot of free help. Over 1,000 people were treated for free. We treated more people with AIDS-defining illnesses than any other place I'm aware of in New York. The only place that treated them fully holistically and got great results, but also breast cancer, dementia, you name it, they were getting help. We had a great team, and that chapter closed, but I've had so many requests, and because I'm caught up on all my projects, it's now time to consider doing it again. So I'm starting by seeing if there are enough good practitioners. You have to first have the good practitioners, and because they're the ones who are going to be helping people, from holistic dentists to naturopaths to herbalists to medical doctors, cardiologists, oncologists, holistic psychiatrists that don't use the drugs. So if you're one of those people, give Luann a call. Your number again, Luann? Oh, she's gone. Okay, let's say hello to Stuart from Los Angeles. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Gary. You can hear me okay, right?
Sure can.
I wanted to call you about protocols for pets and something about oils, but you had a piece today talking about the debris in the oceans, and it hits home with me. Because I used to work as a musician on cruise ships. And, you know, I've never heard anyone talk about this, and it's been 10, 20 years. I used to do the midnight shows, which lasted about an hour. And then afterwards, after playing all night, I'd go on the side of the ship and just look at the ocean. And I would look to the back of the ship and notice that they were throwing huge bags of trash over the back. And this was every night. And I was thinking, this is every day, all these cruise lines, all these ships, 7 days a week, are throwing this garbage into the ocean. I tried contacting different people about it. I don't know what happened, but I never heard about it on the news or anything. And you're talking about it today was the first time I heard anyone talk about it.
Well,
I thought you might want to hear about it because I think most people don't know about it because this would happen like between 2 and 4 in the morning every night.
You are right, Stuart. Most people don't know about it because it's not done in a way that people understand. You take a plastic water bottle, you finish with it, you don't know where it goes. You don't know that that's not recycled back into usable plastics. You don't realize how much of our rivers and end up carrying plastic out. You don't realize how many people at the beach, how many boaters just throw stuff overboard. There are hundreds of millions of beer cans. There are hundreds of millions of the little containers that the plastic holders for those beer cans. And that they're out there. Plastic garbage bags end up out there. So we're putting hundreds of millions of tons of plastic into the ocean, and it doesn't biodegrade. It's going to last a long time. So I'm saying, first, we now have, from the National Academy of Sciences, we have the evidence. It's overwhelming. When you have this one mass, just one of these five masses is three times the size of Texas. And when you have that much, then everything is susceptible, all the marine life in that area is susceptible to being caught into it, like the nets that they're caught into, eating the plastic, choking to death. But you also have, you have a responsibility to clean it up. But no one's cleaning up, and I'm giving them a solution. The solution is not that difficult. It will take time, but if we make it a worldwide effort to clean up the ocean and show the consequences of not cleaning it up and show the trash. I make documentaries, and I currently have four documentaries in production. I'll have three of them released in the next 12 months. The big one's coming out in 2 months. I'm premiering it in New York and Los Angeles for a week in each city. Qualified for the Academy Awards. It's about poverty. But it took me 6 years on that.
I'm wondering
if
that is still happening, if they're still throwing the trash over or if something's been done about that.
No, they don't take the trash back. Compacting machines that compact the debris, but it can still go right overboard.
Right.
All right. In their minds, as long as it's sinking down to the bottom, it's not a problem. It is a problem. You know, we've made our ocean into one large garbage dump, a landfill, and we shouldn't. So we're working on it, and it starts with just informing people the problems and the possible solutions, and let them these and build on it.
When I first did a search on this, I saw that it was twice the size of Texas. Now you're saying it's three times the size of Texas.
Yes.
They called them garbage vortexes, and there's more. There was one that was west of Hawaii, and there were a number of other ones throughout the different oceans.
There are five.
Oh, okay.
They're all huge.
Yeah.
But also you'll find dead zones. Now we have over 200 dead zones where the oxygen is depleted. I went down and filmed in the Mississippi, followed the Mississippi down and out into the Gulf of Mexico, and there's a dead zone right at the mouth of the Gulf of Mexico that is larger than the state of New Jersey, where you've got these algae blooms, you've got nitrogen, fertilizer, runoff, so nothing lives. So anything that requires oxygen can't live in it. So you have massive kill-offs. And I just reported last week on this program, 2 weeks ago, about the hundreds of millions of fish that are dying in 1 week around the world. I gave specific examples. People are not aware of this. Well, this isn't a fluke. Everything is based upon cause and effect. There is no such thing as an effect unless you've had a cause. So we're just trying to bring it to your attention. Stuart, thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing your input.
Thank you.
We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Let's say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. Today we're discussing deep divisions within Nigeria that are helping Boko Haram's murderous campaign. And 50 years to the day after President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law, we're taking a sobering look at its history and its significance.
In your discussion on Nigeria, are you going to bring up the fact that it's the most populous country in Africa and considered the wealthiest country in Africa?
Of course. Our guest is Dr. Chika Onyani, who is a publisher and editor-in-chief of the Africa Sun-Times. So he's been helping us understand the crisis in Nigeria from a well-rounded perspective.
Great. We look forward to it. Utrecht Lead right now.